Hello and welcome to On Farm. It's Anna here with you again this week, and this is the second episode that we are making in partnership with the amazing scientists and researchers at the various safari institutes. Now, this week we're talking all about recent research into the health benefits of Scottish soft fruit. We're probably all aware of how healthy they are and try to eat as many as we can, but how much do we really understand about these fruits that grow on our doorstep in terms of how they can tackle obesity, diabetes, forms of dementia and other things? There's also a chat in this episode about helping the Scottish soft fruit industry cope with climate change, and we've got some hugely knowledgeable and interesting guests from James Hutton and Rowett Institutes. So they will introduce themselves and we'll get on with the chat.
My name's Gordon McDougall. I'm a researcher at the James Hutton Institute in Invergowrie near Dundee, and I've had a very long-term relationship with berries and health.
I'm Fiona Campbell. I'm a researcher at the Rowett Institute at the University of Aberdeen, and I'm doing a research project looking at the effects of Scottish grown soft fruit on health, particularly looking at memory and glucose metabolism.
Hi everybody, my name is Valeria Montano and I'm a researcher as well at the James Hutton Institute like Gordon, and I am working on the studying the genetic diversity of wild and cultivated berries in Scotland.
Thank you all three of you for joining me. I am a bit of an obsessive when it comes to eating Scottish seasonal produce. And I have to say, one of the things that I look forward to the most is the Scottish raspberry season. For me, that's because I know I'm eating something that's been grown in Scotland and I know I'm eating something that's delicious. But the conversation that we're about to have goes so much deeper than that. I think we also probably all know that fruit is good for us. The old apple a day keeps the doctor away, and the more recent conversation around superfoods. But let's dive a little deeper. Fiona, I might pick on you initially, if you don't mind. Can you just tell me a bit more about your current research and the impact on or Scottish soft fruit agriculture, but also on our health and our diets?
Yeah, we've just completed a study exploring the effect of climate resilient soft fruit crops on human health. We've investigated how consuming fruits like honey berries, cherries and raspberries impacts short-term changes in blood glucose levels and memory recall. So we've been looking at healthy human volunteers who've participated in our intervention study. So they've been enjoying breakfast consisting of standardized high carbohydrate meal prepared with a portion of fruits. So they've been getting honey berries, cherries or raspberries. And we've been then collecting blood samples during each visit and then doing computer-based memory tests to look at the effects on their short-term memory.
So tell me a little bit more then. I have read a book recently, which I don't need to go into detail on, but it kind of gave me a very basic understanding of glucose. Mm-hmm. And what happens to our bodies and our brains after glucose consumption and the impact that that has on diabetes and dementia. But I only know this basic information because I've read this book. You know, a year ago, I knew nothing. So can you perhaps tell us in layman's terms what it means and why it's so important?
Yeah, after you eat a meal that's rich in high carbohydrate, you get a surge in blood glucose. In a sort of pre-diabetic stage, or as you get older, becomes less easy to handle that amount of glucose. It goes what we call a hyperglycemic state. It's sort of really large surge of glucose into the blood. And because insulin's not working maybe as efficiently to remove that glucose from the blood, or the sugar from the blood, there's some indication that can then lead to the potential development of diabetes. That can also be linked. There are studies showing that high blood glucose levels after a meal, what we call postprandial glucose, is linked to inhibition or in short-term memory, which is an early indicator of dementia or Alzheimer's disease. That's why if we can find a way to track something natural that can help with the glucose control, this can help and prevent the development of diabetes and cognition problems and developing that in later life. And it's been shown that some of the compounds that you find in soft fruit are beneficial in this effect. So that's why we're interested in looking to see if fruit grown in Scotland can help in this way.
I can see Gordon nodding quite furiously there at some of the things that Fiona is saying. Now, so what is it about berries specifically? And please feel free to, you know, select favourites if you wish. But what is it about berries specifically that's helping or has the potential to help this issue? I think that's, I think I've got an inkling, but I'd love to hear more about it from you.
Yeah, Anna, there's lots of different compounds in berries. I mean, my favourite berry to work on is raspberries. At the Hutton, we've been working on raspberries for, decades now. And the idea is we want to try and breed better raspberries for the Scottish growers so they can get a better return on what they're growing. And obviously the targets there are often just getting a berry that will grow better, will yield better, will deal better with climate change, etc. But the other side of it is, we know that there are components in the berries which have these health effects, like the effects on glycemic responses, etc. And we got involved very early, maybe 20 years ago, looking at just models where we could look at to say, actually, these components in the berries are having effects which seem to have the effects on these diseases. I got very interested in the possibility that they could be having effect on neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and where there's an element of damage to the neurons in the brain. So we started looking at the compounds that are related to the colour of the berries. So these phenolic compounds are actually responsible for the red and the purple colours of various berries. So in raspberries, it's red. But there's other compounds in there which have a similar background, but they aren't coloured. But they seem to be protective against effects of damage to various human cells. So we reached out to people who were more involved in the biomedical side, and we happened to get involved with groups from Portugal and Scandinavia, and we started to look at their models of, for example, Alzheimer's disease. And you can actually grow neuronal cells, nerve cells, brain cells in culture and organize them in such a way they actually look very much like brain tissues. So using these, you can get an idea that the components in the berries may be having an effect which could be beneficial. These compounds we were taking out of raspberry were as effective as some other components they'd already known to have beneficial effects against Alzheimer's. And being a chemist at heart, I started thinking about all these wonderful structures that the berries have. And then we started to try and understand why those compounds could be affecting the mechanisms which are affecting these neurodegenerative diseases.
Wow. I mean, I'm kind of blown away by this, partly because of my fascination and love for berries, but also because actually, you know, you're making the science quite digestible here and quite easy to understand, which is always welcome as far as I'm concerned. I want to kind of come back to the consumption benefits. Fiona, I know your studies have been human studies, which, by the way, if you ever need extra volunteers, put my name down. But I wanted to come back to that. But what, Gordon, what you've also highlighted here, which I think is incredibly important, not just for this podcast, but in general, is really the point that we've got to be able to produce these berries in Scotland in a way that is sustainable and obviously local, commercially viable, in order to maximise the health benefits. And if we can't grow them in Scotland, we can't then deliver on everything else that you've talked about. So for that reason, I think, Valeria, it'd be great to come to you next, because I think your work, if you could tell us a bit more about it, is helping to understand what it is about these berries that's a beneficial, but also how that can be translated into a model that means that we can successfully grow them in Scotland, and not just grow them, but grow the best varieties and the ones that are going to be delivering on all these benefits that Fiona and Gordon have highlighted for us.
Sure. So our work is more focused on understanding the characteristic of natural berries population and how that can be relevant to commercial populations of berries in Scotland. My contribution to this kind of project comes from the fact that I am a geneticist, so I understand like the how to interpret genetic diversity, how to link that to specific characteristics of the fruits, and how to pinpoint which characteristics we can work on to try to improve cultivars in certain directions to make them more sustainable and viable and also valuable in terms of not only health, but also to the environment in the Scottish context. So the idea for us would be to exploit the natural populations of berries that we have available, which is quite a lot in Scotland. Especially our study has been especially focused on blueberries, just because they are there is a variety of plants that are very different even from the look of them out in the wild in Scotland. So our first preliminary study focused on populations that were located at very different in very different environmental conditions. So some local populations that were more in the context of forests, some other that were up in the mountains where there is a low cover of trees. And for what I understand from my colleagues who have samples or have collected these local berries, it's very interesting just to observe the plants and see how different they look, even though they are, at the end of the day, the same species. So some of them are very big and they can grow very tall and they can carry very much bigger fruits compared to others that are much smaller. Maybe they are exposed to lots of pollinators, where sometimes they just reproduce without the help of external pollination. So they just reproduce for what we call vegetative way. So they just reproduce themselves, but they don't need to cross with other individuals of berries. And so we wanted to understand, do they look different because they are also genetically different, or they just look different because they express different characteristics depending on the environmental context where they grow in. So we looked at the genetic distribution, at the genetic variations of the local populations, and we have seen that there are differences indeed. And the idea is that we can exploit not only the natural characteristics, which sometimes are even more valuable commercially than some cultivars, which have been, of course, selected through the years to look in a certain way, to taste in a certain way, to have certain characteristics, but we might improve or enrich the variety of the cultivars that we have available by exploiting the natural characteristics, but also to improve our ability to face the climate change, because what happens in the wild is that natural populations are subjected to a lot of different environmental conditions. And we can see, like in our daily life already, how much climate change has impacted Scotland as well already. So whereas cultivars are more manipulated by the breeders, so the characteristics are kept in a certain way, meeting the interests of the breeders, the wild populations have been allowed to adapt to this characteristic, to these changing characteristics already. So we would like to see whether we can exploit the natural adaptation to this population, to this changing condition, to allow us to improve cultivars in the short run, because usually improving cultivars can be a very long-term work, whereas some certain characteristics can be selected, but that takes many years of generations of blueberries to be selected. But in our case, we would like to see whether we can accelerate this process to face climate change a bit faster, because it is a very fast process, probably even faster than what we humans originally predicted. So now it seems to be going even faster than what expected a few years ago. So we need to move fast as well.
Yeah, so I suppose it's really about adaptability, resilience, and then also about flavor. Now, before we started recording, we were having a chat, and we talked about flavor and the importance of that, because Fiona, you said this, that the ultimate goal, of course, here is if we're developing a clear understanding that the consumption of soft fruit has a health benefit, then ultimately we want to be marketing soft fruit successfully to the general public. And, you know, we know the reputation that Scotland has in terms of its diet. So the more we can do as far as that's concerned, the better. So flavour has to be key, surely.
Yeah, I mean, it's to try and get things that taste good but are also nutritious, because a lot of the stuff that tastes good isn't particularly nutritious. So people tend to, you know, eat a lot of foods that are high in calories and very palatable, and they're not generally full of things that are particularly good for you, you know, people. So if we can get something like berries, which are actually really nice and people like to eat them, and but they're actually also healthy. We can help, and also if they're locally grown as well and sustainable, that's something that I think it would be really good in terms of helping the diet. And part of the reason that berries are so good is that if you can add them in to other maybe slightly unhealthy foods, you can maybe make the unhealthy foods slightly healthier, because that's part of the reason we're doing our research, because we're giving the volunteers a high carb meal, but we're giving the berries and at the same time, and you can kind of use the berries to sort of ameliorate the effects of this sort of maybe unhealthy. If you eat a portion of berries, maybe it'll sort of negate some of the effects of you taking in a lot of sugar. Having said that, the berries themselves do have natural sugar in them as well, so that's part of the consideration as well. But the other compounds that you're also taking in with the sugar help to alleviate some of the effects of taking in that amount of sugar. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of sugar in raspberries, but that's what makes them so nice to eat.
Yes. Well, that's very interesting, because you have prompted a fresh question in my mind, but you've also just unearthed a question that was already in my mind, and that was about the sugar. And because I remember when my daughters were little, and a handy snack was some dried apricots and a few prunes, and then one of the health visitors said to me, "Oh, you're giving them too much natural sugars." And I think actually, particularly when you're feeding kids, I think you try and avoid bad sugar, don't you, with the sweets and things like that, and a natural go-to is fruit. Should we be worried about that, do you think, or do you think actually the point is that we are trying to encourage consumption of fruit as opposed to Haribo or chocolate or something that has no nutritional benefit whatsoever?
There's some concern about actually fruit juice, just taking fruit juice rather than eating the fruit as wholes, if you're taking fruit juice, because the fruit juice is just, a lot of it is very much the concentrated, and you're not getting the fiber, as much of the fiber as you would if you eat the whole berries. So that's part of the thing, is actually to encourage people to eat fruit rather than drink
fruit juice because
fruit juice is, there's a lot of sugar in fruit juice as it is. So it is one of those things.
We could probably come back and do a whole nother podcast episode on this, but I think there has to be an education exercise at the end so that everybody really understands the good, the bad, and the ugly. Gordon, again, I've seen you nodding there, and I'd like to kind of get your thoughts on what we've just talked about, but also you looked particularly interested when Fiona was talking about this potential for the fruit to negate some of the perhaps less positive impacts of the other things we might be eating. And for me, that was a real eye-opener, because I hadn't really imagined that could be the case. I thought we would probably be talking about soft fruit as a fantastic add-on rather than this kind of negation thing, which is fascinating.
Yeah, I think I'd like to just really agree with Fiona about, I mean, it's really important if we're in the business of actually maybe breeding new varieties of berries, that the flavour has to come first. Because, I mean, I can get you a raspberry-like berry from our collection here, which will have massive levels of lots of these health beneficial components. But it tastes terrible. It tastes absolutely terrible. And people just will eat it once and never eat it again. So if we are trying to up the levels of these health beneficial components, we have to have the balance right. Because, if nobody eats it, there's no benefit. In particular for raspberries, one of the reasons that Scottish raspberries do taste so good is they have a longish ripening season with good light. We have exceptional light in Scotland over a long period of time, which means that they sweeten more naturally and you get a more rounded flavour. So they're not forced in the same way. But I would say, I think the idea that having berries as part of a diet can ameliorate the effects of other things is really interesting. And we did work, along with colleagues at the Rowett, with Fiona's friends, looking at this glycemic effect, but there was also an effect on the digestion of fats. And some of these berry components actually seemed to slow down the rate at which fat was digested. And that means that the amount of fat that's going to be, can be taken up into the body and metabolized and become part of our spare tires, if you want to put it that way, is lowered. So that reduction in the rate of fat digestion can have another good effect, and it might be more of an effect on the cardiovascular system, but also maybe a spin-off there into the neuronal system as well. We're talking about one or two health benefits here. Fiona was talking about this glycemic effect, which can have effect on memory, but the berries can also have effects in the gut, and they can have effects all through the gut and have, I mean, we did a lot of work in the past on colon cancer, because we worked out very quickly that a lot of these health beneficial components in berries and other fruits don't really get taken up into the bloodstream that readily. So a lot of them will taken into the colon. And we did a lot of work with our friends at the University of Ulster, and we started to pick out effects which were either due to these individual components, health benefits, health beneficial components of the berries, or what the microbiome in the colon was doing to those components. And, you know, as I said before, I'm a chemist. I love the structures. When you take something that's incredibly structurally diverse and then you let thousands of different microbes in the colon attack it, you get thousands and thousands of possible products, which could be the active components. So, you know, it's like a dream come true for a nerd like me. I mean, it's... Yeah, it's structure and function to the nth degree, and also working with people who really understood colon cancer.
Wow, that is phenomenal. So this is probably not a very easy question to ask you, Gordon, but you know, how far along this journey are we? It sounds as though there are still so many things and so many health benefits still to be uncovered. Are you pretty optimistic that over the next 10, 20, 30 years, these amazing fruits are going to reveal even more phenomenal science that we maybe don't yet understand? Or are you really got a clear handle on it now?
I don't think you ever stop finding out things.
No.
We wouldn't come to work if we'd found it all out. But no, I think we're in a really good position. With the help of the other groups at the Hutton and also the people in the statistical group, the BIOS group, we are in a situation now where we actually understand what parts of the genome of the raspberry are important for making these components. So we can actually say, if you want a raspberry which has high levels of that component, which through other studies we've seen has an effect on Huntington's, you must, in your variety choice, it must have this genetic marker. So you can actually pick the ones from your crosses earlier by looking at the genetic markers, rather than doing all the crossing, growing the plants on and waiting till they produce fruit to see if they have higher levels. Mm-hmm. You can say, with that marker, you have a chance of having higher levels of that important component. And that can take 5-10 years out of the breeding process. So you are then at the point of saying,
yeah,
it's more like a bespoke breeding. You can say, if it doesn't have that, we don't take it on. Obviously, you still want the flavour, the agronomic performance, mm-hmm. the ability to grow well under the changing climate. But you can say, that one has a chance of having that anti-cancer, that anti-neurodegenerative disease, that anti-glycemic memory-aiding compound. It has a good chance of having it at a good level.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I think is a great position to be in. And it's all down to the work of lots and lots of people who've come behind us who've done all the hard genetics.
One thing that leaps out beyond anything else, actually, I think, is teamwork and how you've got so many different people with shared but also differing skill sets and knowledge, and the teamwork, nothing would happen without that.
I wanted to say something that I realized after talking to my colleagues who have been working with soft berries for a very long time, but also other people who work in cultivars at the James Hutton, is how difficult it is to promote and convince people to buy new varieties of fruits, which is something that really puzzled me, because I understand that from my colleagues that it's sometimes easier to access markets that are beyond Europe to test new varieties on the market rather than doing it locally, which is something that was really puzzling because I would think that as a local person, you would rather buy local products, like you just said. Like, yeah, I'm looking mm-hmm. forward to the berry season and buy Scottish yeah. products. But then I was made aware that if we have to release a new variety of berries because they have better characteristics, it's not that easy to get them to the level of the supermarket and to convince people to actually try them and to buy them and in the long run to actually stick to them, because it looks like locals are, they are more used, that they tend to buy products that they are already used to. So even this product is imported from somewhere. The fact that they recognize it as familiar is still a better motivation. Sometimes just because they have different, not only different tastes, but different aspects, like they have such different shade of color, different sizes, it might be a reason for people not to buy them. So that's something that I found very unexpected.
Yeah, that, I'm surprised by that as well, to be honest, because let's take raspberries as an example. I would always look for country of origin, Scotland. And as long as I could find that, I would pick them up. And actually, I would be none the wiser as a consumer as to what variety of raspberry I was eating, because the important thing to me is that it looks like a raspberry and it comes from Scotland. But I may not be typical. Gordon, is that something that you've come across, that kind of behaviour?
Yeah, I totally agree that there are, I think there's two sorts of consumers. So the ones who pick up the berries because they look nice and they don't care really where mm-hmm. they come from, and they want to buy them at that time. Mm-hmm. And then there's some people who want to maybe pick British or Scottish berries. One of the advantages that the Hutton has got is that we've already got a track record in breeding certain types of berries. So all the berries which are called Glen, all the raspberries are called Glen something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a Scottish link there, so you have Glen Ample, etc. And people get to know the name of that variety. The same goes for blackcurrant. We have the Ben series, like the Scottish Mountains. So there'll be, you know, Ben Morlick, whatever, etc. And then in mm-hmm. the blackberries, there's a Loch series, so Loch Tay, blackberries, etc. So there might be new varieties in this series, but they come with, if you like, a family name. So I think that may help with acceptance. But it's building on this history that they've been bred for Scottish and often UK conditions. But one of the interesting mm-hmm. things actually about that is that some of these Glen varieties were bred to be grown in Scotland, but they actually found almost by accident they were terrific for growing in Spain because they had an ability to grow under high temperatures and relatively low watering, which they'd never been tested for in our studies.
That wouldn't be tested very naturally in Scotland with high temperatures and not much water.
But they had this underlying ability, even within the varieties we've already selected for all these other traits of colour, etc., taste. There's a hidden variability which is useful. So they had an ability to withstand heat and with more drought, if you like, that we would never really picked up. But when they were growing in Spain, it was obvious that those ones were doing so much better.
Interesting. That's really interesting. Fiona, is this far too obvious a statement that the more soft fruit you eat, the more you glean the benefit? Is there any element of your study that's looking at volume of consumption, or is that not really what you're focusing on?
We aren't really looking at volume, but I would say that the old five-a-day fruit and veg thing that was coined by an old director of the Row at Phil James, who actually just died just earlier on, was it last year? But the more fruit and veg that you can, and soft fruit is just one of the components. But I think the better it is if you can have more. I mean, the more you can, if you can have at least a portion a day, I think that's what you should be aiming for. But I think a variety of different fruits and vegetables is,
How you process the fruits could be important. If you're putting these berries into juices or you're cooking them some way, could affect the possible health benefits. And knowing how to do that is actually really interesting as well. Knowing how to, if you like, process and present the berries for the best effect. that's also something that the Hutton has been involved in the past, especially with trying to make purees and juices. Really simple things like not mixing certain berries with other fruits can actually help with the health beneficial components from both fruits.
Right.
So, you know, if you make a smoothie with raspberries and mangoes, you might find that the availability of the compounds from both increases because they stabilize each other.
Oh, I see.
If you add in berries with cream or milk, you might find you've reduced the ability to take up some of those health beneficial components from the berries.
Does that come back down to the kind of marketing and education piece then? Because consumers might feel a little bit at sea with not knowing what's the best combination effectively. I mean, I suppose my assumption would be keep them unadulterated, put the berries on the yogurt and the granola and eat them as they were designed to be eaten. But at the same time, I enjoy a smoothie. And if I've got some frozen raspberries in the freezer, I chuck them in with a whole host of other ingredients, sometimes milk, kale, whatever. I suppose we don't want to overcomplicate things, but how do we get those messages across to consumers, do you think?
This is more where we're aiming at the people who are making products. It's this food processors.
Oh, I see. Formulation. Yeah,
The general public, I would say, eat your berries.
Just eat them.
Eat them any way you like.
Yes.
So I was going to say get them down you, but...
I nearly said exactly the same thing.
Maybe, you know, if a juice maker's making a new product and he wants to say, I'm doing the best out of these berries, you might want to think about how he makes that juice and what he combines things with for the optimum.
So don't do that until you've spoken to Gordon McDougall, okay?
thanks for the plug.
Something that's always on my mind across the variety of different Scottish food and drink items is the ways in which the farming community can use these wonderful claims of taste and quality and sustainability as part of their marketing. How and why and when, I suppose, some of these amazing things that are emerging with regard to soft fruit can be used as part of our soft fruit marketing or even our kind of Scottish farming PLC marketing. Gordon, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, that's actually a really difficult question. It's a really hard thing to make any kind of health claim on any types of food. And you probably will notice if you go around the supermarket, there aren't many actual health claims made in any type of foods. There's lots of reasons for that. But I think a better way to do the marketing is to, on the websites where people are talking about their food being Scottish and healthy, they can have links to ourselves or the Row, etc., saying, these are studies which show that berries can have these effects. Saying it on the packaging might be just a step too far and hard to get past the actual legal side of things about what claims can be made. But something simple is that it's Scottish and good for you. It's a very simple message, gets across, and then you can have the detail for those who want it on the websites.
You're great with these one-liners, Gordon. I think you need to be employed by an advertising agency.
We can make up a new acronym like sustainable, affordable and tasty or something like that, the SAT or something like that, that can go along with the Scottish product. It can be recognised as a Scottish product and as all these amazing statistics that come out of our studies, let's say.
Yeah, good idea. Scottish farming loves an acronym, so let's just add another one.
For the farmers, I would say, if they can contact us or so, if they want help on marketing their raspberries or whatever, we can give them information about health benefits and to help them market their crops. We're also doing, relatively new to Scotland, we're looking at honeyberries, which are actually not native to Scotland. And they have a lot of potential because they're low input and they grow, they've got a different growing season and they're resilient in terms of climate change. They don't need as much input, but they need kind of more marketing because, people don't know about them and they kind of look a funny shape as well, but they taste very nice. And there are quite a number of growers now in Scotland for honeyberries. You need to eat sort of a variety of fruit and try and eat a little bit each day. And yeah, eat the whole fruit if you can. I think that's the main thing. You don't really need to, but yeah, I mean, but have it in the smoothie at home. But as Gordon says, it's more for the food manufacturers, what they're doing in terms of making, you know, the things that they might, you know, be taking something that's potentially healthy, but actually what they do to it ends up making it not as healthy as it could be because it's changed in some way. But certainly for consumers, you know, if you're buying your fruit, you know, just buy it, then try and eat Scottish fruit because it usually tastes better. So, you know, it's local, so you know, and it's not travelled for miles and miles, you know. So,
Valeria, have you got any final messages for farmers or consumers or both?
Yeah, for farmers, we would be very happy, delighted to hear from them what their perception of climate change is at the moment in their own daily experience and what they think we should work on to improve our ability to face climate change with this kind of cultivars, because I think their experience is more valuable than ours as just geneticists, you know. So that would be great if they wanted to reach out and let us know what they feel about all these changes in the environment, really. And for consumers, definitely go local if you can. And the other thing is that, yeah, get a bit daring and go out and explore the wild environment and see if we can find local berries that are not cultivated and see what they taste mm-hmm. like. Because our experience with the local blackberries, it's amazing. Like the wild ones are absolutely unbeatable in terms mm-hmm. of flavor and taste.
Oh, really. They are. Yeah. I quite often take my kids out and go foraging for blackberries, exactly. Although I get told off by my mum because she says they're not blackberries, they're brambles, golden brambles.
That's another thing that I learned here in Scotland.
Same thing, yeah.
That I was not aware of. The blackberries are not actually blackberries in the wild. But anyway, I absolutely love them. I used to do that in my home country. Yeah. They taste very different in my home country, extremely different, but they're both very good. And they make the best pie, so very much recommended.
With farmers, I think it's really important just to keep the dialogue open, because they're struggling with, you know, with margins and prices, and they know that down the line they'll need new varieties, and we're doing our best to get them those new varieties. But all feedback is really good, because sometimes we can be a little academic and think the biggest problem is this, but actually the biggest problem might be something more process driven with that farmer and how they produce the raspberries, and that could be the most crucial thing. However, most farmers are usually pretty good at telling us what they need. And with the consumers, it's got to be, yeah, just eat more berries, they're good for you, and if you can, eat Scottish ones.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. You know, we've acknowledged briefly that it's challenging financially for soft fruit growers at the moment, and they've got some significant labour challenges as well, which I think probably at some point down the line warrants a whole podcast episode in and of itself. But I know that there are people who are working to try and reduce those issues. But ultimately, as you say, they're reliant on varieties and the best types of varieties that are most suited to the climate and taste the best and yield the best. So I suppose that's what it's all about, really. So thank you, all of you, for giving us your time and your expertise. I have definitely learnt a lot today, and I'm just as passionate, if not more so, about eating more of these Scottish berries. So thank you, all of you, very much indeed.
That's great. Thanks very much. Cheers.
Yeah, thanks very much. It's been a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, I also learned a lot, I must say.
This episode is part of an on-farm mini-series in partnership with Safari, which is the Scottish Environment, Food and Agriculture Research Institutions, made up of six globally renowned institutions providing research and expertise to Scotland's agriculture, environment and food communities. They are, and we'll name check them all because it's really lovely to have been involved with them and they absolutely deserve it. Aberdeen University's Rowett Institute, our old friends at the Morden Research Institute, SRUC, or Scotland's Rural College, Biomathematics and Statistics Scotland, or BIOS, the James Hutton Institute, and the Royal Botanic Garden, Edinburgh. So there are links in the show notes to Safari so that you can find out more if you need to. But I hope you enjoyed that episode. Really lovely to listen to, and we are really enjoying working with Safari on this project.